I'm sorry. With much gratitude, I would like to welcome all of you here this evening. This function is of vital importance, not only to each of our lives, but for the future of India and the future of the world. One time, a press reporter asked our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, why so many of your students are young people. Srila Prabhupada explained to the reporter, why are the universities and colleges mostly filled with young people? The reply was because they have very fertile brains, good memories, and they're eager to learn. Srila Prabhupada said yes. Older people are by nature generally very set in their ways, very conditioned to a certain way of thinking, a certain way of living, and usually very, very much entangled in the struggle for survival. But youth is the age that is optimum for a person to be trained, educated. It's like we have our Honorable Srinath Ji Prabhu. Now he's a very, very successful international industrialist and businessman. But when he was a teenager and in his early 20s, he got his master's degree in London, his PhD at the University of Pennsylvania in America. He learned so much, so much, so much. And that gave him a foundation to build a whole career upon. So youth is the time in life that is most precious to actually gain proper knowledge, a foundation which gives us a direction and a power by which we can develop for the rest of our lives. Prahlad Maharaj, he told his 5-year-old classmates that now is the time to understand the science of self-realization. Who is God? What is the purpose of life? How to achieve that purpose of life? Why is there suffering? What is the cause of that suffering? What will bring me real happiness and fulfillment? Now, most of you were 5 years old long ago. We all should have started then. But better late than never. But now that you are in your teenage years or your early 20s, your minds, your consciousness is in a state of great receptivity. And with God's grace, you have full lives with so much energy and vitality to do something wonderful for yourselves, for your families, for your nation, and for the world. the leaders on every level of the world, politically, socially, spiritually, philosophically, in law, in business, in agriculture, every leader of the world tomorrow is in the colleges today. Unfortunately, many of our big universities throughout the world, they give much technical scientific information, but do not cultivate the noble virtues of the heart. Knowledge is power. If power is utilized by someone with the wrong motivations, it could create the greatest harm and suffering in the world. What the world is in need of, desperately, is intelligent, well-educated young men and women who can take leadership in all fields of today's society. Men who have humility, compassion, morality, and these are all natural products of spiritual realization. This function tonight is not simply an entertaining facility to be happy. Perhaps it may be for some of you. It is the greatest desperate need in the world. Today we were asked to speak on the subject of overcoming depression. Very few people understand what a serious subject this is. Depression is one of the greatest problems in the world today. We should understand what it is and why it is wreaking havoc all over the planet. Even despite so much scientific, technological, economical progress throughout the world. Srila Prabhupada explained, despite so much advancement in so many education and scientifically oriented fields, there is a pinprick within our society that is causing so much suffering individually and collectively. Sometimes I give my personal observation on very simple, ordinary functions of life and how they have developed since I was a child. Would you like to hear again? Thank you. I was born in the 1950s in the Western world. And seen how science has changed people's lives. Simple thing is a telephone. In those days, the telephones had dials. Did you ever see a dial telephone? Do you still have them in India? They are only in antique stores in the West. They're practically prehistoric. You had to dial the phone. One was easy. Two. Three. Four. And you always dreaded knowing someone who had zeros in their telephone number. So much time. So much energy. You had to go... And then you had to wait for it to go... Torturous. But that's what we had to live through in those days. And then, in the 60s, the end of the 60s, science and technology invented touch tone, where you just press a button with the number. That means one and zero is the same. You just go, Now life is becoming easy. Then they developed cellular phones with satellite systems. In the old days, if you had a phone call, you had to run and you had to go to wherever the phone was in the house, and there was a cord. And if you wanted to do something while you were talking, you would be like a little fly in a spider web of the cord. You'd be it all wrapped around you. But now there's the cellular phone. You can speak anywhere, to anyone. And I've seen now, you don't even have to dial. I've been in cars where the driver just says, "My office." And he doesn't hold anything, he just talks. In fact, just recently, I was in Bombay. And I called my father in America. And he answered the phone as if he was right next door. And you never know where the person is when you call them. I asked him, "Where are you now?" He said, "Oh, I'm at the 9th hole in a golf course, sitting on a toilet." Sitting on a toilet in the middle of the 9th hole of a golf course. And he's talking on the phone. I'm thinking, what technology this developed. Television in the 1950s. Black and white. 2 to 4 stations per city. And if you wanted to change the volume or the channel, you had to go through the rigorous austerity of getting up from your bed and turning the dial. Like that. And then in the late 60s came the immersion of the emergence of the remote control. And my parents really thought this was something great. It was a Zenith, one of the first remote controls. This button, there were 2 buttons, and it moved the channels 1 station at a time. You had to go, and the dial would go, and half the time it didn't work. You had to aim it right at this little target at the television. My father would be so angry, he'd just go, and it just wouldn't, he'd stand right in front of it, and I'd go, and I won't tell you the words he used as he was angry with that television set. Now, some places there's up to 200 television stations. And you just press, it goes, so much technology, so much advancement. And the airplanes, transportation, highways, even here in India. Do you remember a few years ago going Bombay to Pune, going through those ghats and all those traffic jams? Now you just go, so nice. Well, in America, every road is like that, practically, for decades. And so much advancement in medical technology. Many diseases are now curable. The bubonic plague, leprosy, smallpox, different types of cancer are treatable now. Otherwise, people would die. And the expectancy, the rate of life, of how long a person lives, appears to be much longer than before. From a strictly medical point of view. But if we analyze the actual life rate from a human point of view, it's getting lower and lower and lower every year. Because abortion is increasing and increasing and increasing. In some countries, one out of every three children is killed within the womb of their mother. Now, if you put all the aborted children, that they're dead before they're even one, into the equation of the average human life, humans are not living longer now than before. Despite all this progress, our militaries have such incredible scientific satellite-controlled weapons, nuclear weapons. It used to be that the general was in the front lines of the army. In today's war that's going on, the general's in another country, surrounded by televisions and satellite devices and just speaking on cellular phones and pressing buttons, 1,000 miles from the nearest bullet. Arivo. So much technology. But is the quality of life improving proportionately? Alcoholism, drug addiction, rapes, criminals, it's on the increase. The largest industry in the United States of America, which is the wealthiest country in the world, is prisons. Millions of people in prison, and over 50% of them for felonies, major crimes. Such problems. In today's world, where I grew up, we never closed the doors, never locked them when we left the house. I went through high school. I never knew a girl that wasn't a virgin. We never heard of violent crimes except sometimes on the news. I never knew a single person or heard of a certain person that ever got divorced except Elizabeth Taylor. She was famous for that. Today, 70% of marriages in America end in divorce within 3 years. One third of the children are aborted. And the same little town that I lived in now, there's all kinds of crime. all kinds of drugs, deadly drugs. Is this progress? One of the greatest difficulties in the world is depression. Every person is in pursuit of happiness. But why? Why there's so much frustration when we're making so many grand arrangements for happiness? Prahlad Maharaj told us long ago that if we do not understand our relationship with God, if we don't understand who we are and what the real purpose of life is, then all of human civilizations' attempts to solve problems, their solutions will create bigger problems than the original problem. Look at the ecology today. So much pollution. We don't know what's going to happen as the ozone is breaking down due to pollution. In fact, this global warming condition of the world is threatening billions of people's lives. Why? Just for a few comforts, we create devices that is destroying the ecological balance of material nature. When the European people first came to America, they said they discovered it. But actually, the Native American Indians were living there. Do you know why they're called Indians? How many know? Because Christopher Columbus, he understood, and actually all the kings and queens of Europe knew, the country with the greatest wealth in the world was India. And whoever has the best access for travel to transport the riches, the jewels, the silks, the spices of India will be prosperous and powerful in Europe. So he was looking for a shortcut to India. And instead of going all the way around Africa and up, he was thinking the world is round, which was revolutionary in those days. Although the Vedas said 5,000 years ago, and even before that, everyone knew it was round. But in Western civilization, they thought it was flat until about 500 years ago. So he thought, I will go shortcut. And on his way, he came to this strange place, and he thought it was India. So he called the people Indians. But actually, it was America. Some accident. And they started developing and exploiting the resources of land and neglecting the balance of ecology. And one of the great Native Indian chiefs, Seattle, he came out with a statement which is still echoing in many people's hearts. Hundreds and hundreds of years later, he said, if you do not learn to live in harmony with nature, you will suffer, because nature is your mother. If you pollute the bed you sleep in, then you will have to live in that pollution all your lives. So out of a sense of greed and exploitation, without consciousness or knowledge of what is the purpose of life or how the world works, we have been creating havoc. And today, we would like to speak about just one of the many, many problems that are inflicting severe pain and danger to human society. And that is depression. I will speak some facts. According to the concise Oxford Dictionary, the definition of depression is a pathological state of extreme dejection or melancholy, characterized by a mood of hopelessness and feelings of inadequacy, often with physical symptoms. Alternately, a reduction in vitality, vigor, and spirits. The symptoms of depression, just a few of them. Chronic anxiety. All of these symptoms, to be categorized as depression, has to continue for long durations of time. Anxiety, a sense of inner emptiness, hopelessness, sadness, dejection. People either, their sleeping and eating habits become unregulated. They either lose weight or they gain weight. They either can't sleep at all or sleep all the time. People have guilt, worthlessness, no interest in anything in life. And oftentimes such persons are plagued with thoughts of suicide. That is called unipolar depression. Then there is bipolar depression, where sometimes one is in that despondent state of hopelessness, and at other times they became manic. Those symptoms are excessive elation. At times they're totally down, at other times they're just unnaturally, artificially elated. Unusual irritability. Decreased need for sleep, grandiose notions, increased talking, uncontrolled racing thoughts, increased sex desire, increased energy, and inappropriate behavior. The causes of depression are often personal difficulties, environmental influences. Sometimes it is biological and genetic, influenced by depressive conditions within one's life. Depression is the most common of all serious brain diseases. It is important for all of us to understand this, because it may come upon you, and if it doesn't, you will see just by the statistics we read today that you will meet people in this world that may be your friends and loved ones that are suffering. According to the World Health Organization, they gave a report in the year 2001 that 450 million people are suffering mental and behavioral disorder in the world today. In fact, they proclaimed that in the 21st century, the disease that will cause the most suffering and death is mental illness. And of all types of mental illness, depression is number one. Depression, the World Health Organization has said, is the leading cause of disability within the world today. It ranks fourth in the global burden of disease. In the United States of America alone, they calculate that $43.7 billion per year are lost due to the effects of people suffering from depression. In the world today, there is over 1 million suicides per year. 10 to 20 million people per year attempt suicide. And according to official statistics, over 3/4 of those suicides are due to people suffering from depression. Depression is the number one cause of suicide in the United States of America. People who have depression, it is explained that in America alone, minimum 19 million adults suffer from depression. 9.5% of the population of the country will suffer depression within one given year. Of those millions of people, there 15%. Please listen carefully. 15% of those who are not properly treated for depression will commit suicide. Now, the United States of America, I'm sure many of you want to go to college there. Some of you may want to settle there and send money back to your parents and maybe even bring them there to live happy, prosperous life where the roads are paved in gold and everything like that. Actually, when I'm in America and I'm trying to help serve the people there, very often Indians who went there in the 70s and 80s, they come to me in tremendous stress because they're so worried about their children. They see their children. They're having dates. They're drinking alcohol, sometimes taking drugs, going to very worrisome places. They're losing their morality. They're losing their culture. It is a common thing that people come, that their daughter's pregnant, 16, 17-year-old Gujarati girl, shame to their family, unwedded. They can't give her an abortion because they have certain ethics. But how will they ever marry her in the future? And they repent, they regret. Why did we ever come to this place? Is it worth having nice roads and nice cars and nice telecommunication systems and making so much money? in the USA, 20% of deaths amongst young people is suicide. That is a government statistic. And the majority of that 20% of all deaths, suicide, is due to mental depression. Suicide is the third leading cause of death for young people, both boys and girls, between the ages 15 and 25. Does that startle you? I should repeat that. Twenty percent of the deaths of young people between 15 and 25 is they're so frustrated, they're so depressed that they commit suicide. From 1990 to 2001, there has been a 50% increase in the youth attempting to take their lives in suicide. I remember our Guru Maharaj. He was at the University of California, Berkeley campus. Very high seat of education. And there was a tower. And students, under so much stress of their studies and feeling such depression and emptiness and loneliness, were regularly jumping from the top of it to commit suicide. These are people with the greatest material future in the world. In the United States of America, amongst adolescent youth, 500,000 attempt suicide every year. These are people your age. And 5,000 successfully end their lives. In the United Kingdom, according to the government statistics, over 7,000 people commit suicide every year. In the United States of America, and actually the main cause, 3/4 of suicides are due to depression. 19 million people in America are calculated to suffer depression. This is amongst adults. It is said that 1 out of 5 adults in the USA will suffer serious depression within their lives. And 1 out of every 3 young people will suffer serious mental disease of depression within their life. Children age 5 to 14, ranking number 6 in the causes of their death, is suicide. These staggering facts do have a effect of making us question why the wealthiest, most progressive, materially, nation in the world having such problems. And as you know, if you inherit or you import the culture of the West, this comes along with it. If you pick up a coin, you can't pick up just one side of the coin. The other side is with it. There's nothing wrong with science and technology. But what is the problem? The quality of people's consciousness is empty. It is shallow. It is superficial. And this causes such terrible suffering. We were speaking to this very nice newspaper reporter before the program today. And we were explaining, how do young people grow up these days? Things are such incredibly fast pace. It used to be, when I was young, that people would go to the cinema house to see good, dramatic human acting. Do you remember Purnachandra Prabhu? Do you remember Srinathji Prabhu? You'd go to see a human performance that would make you cry, that would make you laugh. But today, the young people, they spend the most amount of money for special effects. With this, everything's just going and they're just and these different monsters and these noises and weapons and people are killing each other with all kinds of radars and unbelievable. And Spider-Man walking up buildings. When I was in Thailand, I'm not going to mention names, but one of my friends went to a cinema with another person. This is just last month. And they were talking what a great cinema was. I said, well, what was good about it? The special effects. I said, well, was there any good acting? Acting? We didn't notice any real acting. Nobody knew how to act. But the special effects, and explosions and everything, just unbelievable. People's minds are just bombarded with these things. Young people, they're not even given the chance to really introspectively think. Their minds are just controlled by these passionate energies. Sometimes I visit some friends or family members and they're watching the news. Just this person's in Iraq and this person's in India and this person's in Africa and it's just... It used to be a person used to just, one person would just sit there in front of the television and say, this happened in Iraq and this happened in Russia and this happened in California and this happened in Bombay. And you'd actually be sitting with a person listening out. Everything is so fast. People's attention span is just deteriorating like anything. They're living lives of such mental stress, such a fast mental pace, so much artificiality, superficiality, such unnatural life that is most of all impersonal. And therefore it's so very, very difficult when you're conditioned in that way to be able to really have deep personal relationships. Nirvishesha sunyavadi paschatyadeshatarani. One of the greatest dangers of human society that causes such intense immorality, emptiness, and ultimately depression, is that people's minds are so disturbed, they're so conditioned, they really don't know how to have deep personal relationships. If you don't have good relationships, no matter how expert you are at computer technology, your heart will find terrible depression. Because it's meaningless. It's empty. Due to impersonalism, there's so much divorce. Due to impersonalism, people have a hard time having real friendship. The mind becomes so very, very, very disturbed. In the medical field, there is the psychosomatic diseases. That means when the disturbed mind influences the physical body in such a way that it becomes sick. One of the leading reasons for cancer, for the evolvement of things like hepatitis and AIDS. I knew a person, he had AIDS for 25 years. And never even knew it. But when a traumatic... There is a field of science called psychoneuroimmunology, which studies scientifically how the mind influences the body. Within the brain there are these neurotransmitters. And when there's so much stress and so much dissatisfaction, so much emptiness in life, it actually sends messages to the various cells of the body and can actually create terrible diseases. People's minds are so disturbed. Years ago, we didn't hear much about serial killers. Now, it's a regular fashion. It's practically a fashion in the most developed, wealthy, and prosperous nations of the world, where people whose minds are so deranged, they kidnap little children, rape them, massacre them in the most ghastly ways, one after the other after the other. People just shooting innocent people for no reason at all except just madness. High school students going into their classrooms with firearms and killing their teachers and their students. In grade school, 10, 11 years old. This never happened before. The power of the mind. How it affects our body, how it affects our life, how it affects the world. Look at what one mind can do to the world. In Germany, there was Mr. Hitler. One mind that was so stressed, so depressed and empty inside, He had so much hatred. His mind was just so full of dirt that one mind impelled a machine of people to murder over 6 million innocent Jews, millions and millions of others, over 20 million Russian soldiers were killed, millions of European soldiers, tens of millions of innocent civilians, because of one person's ecologically polluted mind. The power of mind is unbelievable. You have heard of the placebo effect? Where in medicine, they have tests where they have many, many people with the same disease. And they give half of them medicine with actual medication in it. And the others, just a pill with absolutely no medication in it. And the people who take the pill with no medication, there's a large percentage that they actually get cured. How is it possible? Mind over matter. Because they're thinking with their mind that I'm taking the medicine, and they have faith in the medicine that it's going to make me better, and just by their faith and hope from their mind, by that peace in their mind, it actually generates good transmission of energy to the cells of the body, and they heal. If a person is diseased, even with the best of medicines, if they're under too much stress, if they're basically in a situation of dissatisfaction, it's a great obstacle to the effect of the medication. That is the power of the mind. In 1995, Harvard University began an annual conference where they invite 2,000 professionals. The title of the conference is Spirituality and Healing. The effects that spirituality has on the mind and how it promotes medical healing in people's lives. So people are very much recognizing the very desperate need within our world to actually deal with the problem of the mind. Depression essentially is rooted in extreme dissatisfaction. Bhagavad Gita explains from the essential spiritual point of view what is the problem and how to deal with it. If a person is suffering from depression, which is a disease, and it's generally very chronic, they may have to take treatment, psychological treatment, or sometimes medication, just to somehow or other bring some sort of natural biological balance to one's condition. That may be necessary. What we are going to discuss today is how the Bhagavad Gita deals with the very root cause and permanent solution to the depressions the anxieties and the sufferings of the mind. The very setting of Bhagavad Gita illustrates the inevitable frustrations that come upon all of us due to the complexities of the world we live in. Krishna chose to speak the Gita to Arjuna after putting him in a state of depression. It was not chronic, but it was definitely a very serious mental and physiological suffering that he was experiencing. It was based on relationships. That's the source of all misery in the world, really. Relationships. Arjuna saw on one side the Pandavas, on the other side the Kurus. Loved ones, people he respected, that were about to have a war and kill each other. He didn't want to fight, but at the same time, the fight was about to take place and he was the leader. He was trying to rationally justify how not to fight. His mind was in turmoil. How many of us, on one level or another, just by the natural course of life, we don't ask for problems. We don't ask for difficulties and complexities. We don't ask for various people and environmental conditions to invade within my life and within what I'm trying to do for my family and for the world. But inevitably, it comes. Real inner strength is not to avoid conflict, because you cannot. Real inner strength, real success, is having the inner substance by which any obstacle that comes in your life, you know exactly how to cross over it, and you become stronger, more deeply realized, and closer to God through the process. Arjuna, he came to a state of such confusion that tears were flowing from his eyes. Now usually, Kshatriyas, heroic warriors, do not cry in public. But he could not control his tears. He had his celebrated Gandiba bow. His limbs were trembling so dramatically. His hand could not even hold his bow. It fell to the ground. His entire beautiful complexion became white like a ghost. His mouth became dry. His voice was choked up. He was terribly suffering. His mind, because of the conditions that came upon him. In that state, he realized, I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. there is nothing I can do to figure out how to get out of this dilemma. Then he turned to his guru, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. With folded palms, he prayed, "I'm confused about my duty. I've lost all composure due to weakness. I do not know what is to be done or what is not to be done. Now I am a soul surrendered to you. Please accept me as your disciple and instruct me." Now Krishna, who loved Arjuna as a dearmost friend, if you saw your friend in that condition, would you be happy? The first thing Krishna did was smiled. Because he understood, until one becomes humble, until one realizes, "I do not know," one cannot open one's heart to learn. There was a German music teacher. Our Guru Maharaj used to use this example. He would charge a certain amount of money to teach a new student. And he would charge 2 to 3 times more to people who already knew music. Because it's more difficult to teach a person how to give up his bad habits and start over again than just to teach a new person. A person who doesn't know anything about religion, you just teach them and it's a clean slate. But people who have all kinds of misconceptions and concocted philosophies, you have to just clear out all the thorns of their minds before you can actually start building a temple within their hearts. It's like we had that nice little farm in Downed. And there were so many thorn bushes. We had over 100 people for 60 days just trying to cut down these thorn bushes. Some of them were bigger than trees because they were there for so long. And until we got all of them cut down, which was so much labor, cutting and cutting, and everyone, not only do you cut, but you get cut. It's miserable. And then what to do with all these thorns? They're starting fires and burning them. It's horrible. And after all that massive effort, then you can start developing the land. That's the way the mind is. For people who have misconceptions and conditionings, you have to actually first clear the impersonalism, clear the misconceptions, and then you could actually start developing their consciousness. If you think you know, no one can really teach you. So the beginning of spiritual knowledge is humility and simplicity. Until you realize that we don't know, we can never really be receptive to learn. So when Krishna saw Arjuna in that lamentable condition, he smiled out of his mercy. And his first words, "Asochanan vasochastvam," he said, "Arjuna, you are speaking like a very learned wise man. But the fact is, you are a fool. You're lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise do not lament for the living or the dead. Why? because they understand what is life. Dehino smin yatha deve komaram yuvaram jara. The fundamental teaching of spirituality, that as the spirit soul passes from infancy, boyhood, youth, and old age, in the same way at the time of death, the spirit soul passes into another body. Today we were hearing a nice reading where our Guru Maharaj, when he was about 80 years old, he was at Jagannath Puri. And he was with his devotees on the seaside, and the big waves were coming. Big waves in Puri. And he said, they're saying that we don't change our bodies. But when I came here as a little boy, I was playing, I was jumping. When I was a young man, I just was passing my MA exams. And to celebrate, I came to Puri and I was jumping up and down in the waves and dancing. And now I'm walking with a cane. I have a different body. Every 7 years, every cell of the body changes. And previously, people said that every cell except your brain cells change. But in recent scientific discovery, they found that every one of the brain cells also are transformed within 7 years. The body's always changing. So who am I? And at the time of death, the body's there, the brain's there, everything's there, except you. So if you're not there when your body's a corpse, that means you're not the body. Why they put you in the fire, or put you under the ground, or feed you to the birds? That's not you. That's the external dress. That's the vehicle without a driver. So Krishna is explaining, you are the eternal soul. That is the beginning of real knowledge. Who am I? How can you learn to be happy unless you know who you're trying to make happy? You're not a tongue. You're not eyes or ears. You can give so much pleasure to the senses and to the mind, but the heart is starving. You could polish the cage of the bird, but if you don't feed the bird will suffer and die. That is human society in the 20th and 21st century. Decorating and giving pleasure to the superficial covering with no real understanding of who we are or what we really need. Krishna explains in Gita the nature of the soul. It is the universal principle of all spiritual systems in the world. The soul is eternal. It is full of knowledge. It is full of bliss. Satchidananda. The soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, or God. The innate, eternal need of every soul is to love and be loved. Can anyone honestly disagree with that? What we're all longing for, crying for internally, is to love and be loved. And we find people like Hitler and other such crazy people, when we trace to their childhood, we find that they had no love. They were not loved. They never learned how to love. They went through different stages of abuse. And therefore their minds were so agitated and corrupted, they just wanted to take it out on the world. People are looking for love. The most popular stories are love stories, are they not? And Hollywood, you have heard of Hollywood? It's the Western version of Bollywood. Somehow or other, they tried to imitate Bollywood, so they named it Hollywood. That is my understanding. At least that's the way Indians may like to think of it. There were movies where the Ten Commandments, did you ever see? The Ten Commandments. And Moses is having an affair with a young lady. That's not in the Bible. But it's in there's the King James version of the Bible and there's the Hollywood version of the Bible. Why they put that in there? Because if there isn't a love story in a movie, then who's going to want to see it? People want to see these things. And when our propensity for love and being loved is corrupted due to dissatisfaction, it becomes kama, lust. Lust is simply misdirected love. It is a perverted reflection of the nature of our very souls to love. Now, what is the condition of our modern society today? Let us examine. Should I continue?
No!
I'm sorry. Thank you. Computers are perhaps the highest type of technology that the common man is in connection to, is it not? What we can do with computers, it baffles my mind. And I'm actually very happy to be like that. When I was young, big, big companies had computers. These IBM computers. They had to have a big, gigantic room to hold one computer. Now, you can do 10 times more than that gigantic computer that took up hundreds of square feet of office space on a little laptop computer. And actually, I've seen little children, 7 or 8 years old, who can just operate them with their eyes closed. It's a computer age. But on the internet, what is the number one, without competition, type of website that the mass people of the world tune into? Pornography. This is not the Hare Krishna opinion. This is the statistic facts. When that horrible tragedy of 9/11 took place, thousands of people killed in the World Trade Center, in the Pentagon, and on that airplane in Pittsburgh. That was the first, after that tragedy took place, I saw this in the news. It was the first time in history of the internet that sex was not the number one word in the keyword, what is it called? In the keyword search. It was the first time in history sex was not in the top 10. Does it take such a massive tragedy to get people to wake up from their stupor? What am I doing with my life? So think about it. The internet and the computer could actually be used to do such wonderful things for the upliftment of humanity if it's used in the right consciousness. But because of unclean hearts, because people are frustrated, because the soul's desperate need to love and be loved is frustrated, this is what they're using technology for. To further agitate, pollute, and corrupt their minds. There is no greater need in this civilization today than compassion. Compassion can only come from a heart that has love. Where is that love's origin? That is the most important question to ask. That is the foundation by which we can build our lives and careers on, so that we pursue truth. Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. The soul is part of God. Our nature is to love God. Who is God? Our Vedic literatures describe that God is Bhagavan. He possesses all opulences in full. Everything that attracts our heart, God is the embodiment of that. It's the origin of all beauty. All beauty is emanating from the Lord. All knowledge, strength, wealth, fame, renunciation, everything that we want to be attracted by and everything we want to attract people with, in fullness, it is all emanating from Krishna, the all-attractive. Therefore, he is the supreme object of every living being's natural love. And that love is within us. But we have forgotten. We have neglected it. We've looked everywhere else for that love except where it is. He has come. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Why? Why this natural propensity to love God has been forgotten? Because in order for love to be real, we must have freedom. You cannot program a computer to love. You can program it to do almost anything else. So God did not make us like computers. We are free, independent, willing beings. And when we choose to exploit rather than to serve, then the soul comes under the influence of the eight elements of material nature. Krishna tells us in Gita, earth, water, fire, air, and ether are the basic components of the gross material energy. But then there's a subtle material energy. The mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. The false ego is the subtlest of all elements. Now, if you want to get to the root of a disease, you have to go to its subtlest source and deal with it from there. And then everything else becomes purified. What is the nature of the ahankar, the false ego? Janasya moho yamahum mameti. We have these two misconceptions. I and mine. I am this body, and all things in relationship to this body are mine. This state of consciousness makes us self-centered. Even psychiatrists, psychologists, and social analyzers, they call this the I generation. People are so self-centered. They focus their whole world on their problems and their needs. The whole universal creation revolves around what I want and what I need. And when you have a situation where everyone is thinking like this, so much conflict, competition, and ultimately war and destruction. Because our propensity to love is misdirected. When the mind becomes affected by the false ego, then the mind becomes a turbulent entity. Bhagavad Gita says, when the mind comes under the control of the false ego, it is our greatest enemy. When the false ego captures the mind, immediately sends six enemies to invade it. Lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion. The mind's nature is thinking, feeling, and willing, accepting and rejecting. But when the mind comes under the influence of these enemies, then it promotes the influence of these enemies to affect the world through our words and through our actions. Arjuna tells us that it is more difficult to control the mind than the wind. Krishna explains when lust sits within the mind and tries to find satisfaction through the senses, it is like fire. The more fuel you give it, the hungrier it becomes. It is insatiable. Krishna tells, when we have attachment, lust develops. When lust is unfulfilled, there is anger. From anger comes bewilderment of memory. From bewilderment of memory, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, we engage in abominable activities. Like things attract like things. If you have a dirty place, especially in Bombay, you will attract rats and insects. Have you seen? Rats and insects do not like clean places. but they love dirt. They love places that are neglected. Similarly, if our minds are dirty, they will attract the rats and the cockroaches of material influences. One of the horrible causes of people's depression is the effect of the environment around them. They're tuned in to attract certain influences. Just like in television or radio, if you turn to a frequency, immediately that frequency comes right in and it's on your screen. You turn to another frequency, you have a choice what you turn to. If our minds are influenced by ignorance and passion, all these things just come right into us. The thoughts of others, the activities of others, the words of others, the actions of others, and the energy that they create will enter into your mind according to how your mind is programmed to receive them. If you're programming your mind to become clean, to become pure, you can actually channel your mind in such a way that the influences of peace, compassion, love, and God Himself enters into your heart. That is why we chant the holy names. So the most important duty of every human being is to clean the consciousness. There are unlimited subtle entities, ghostly beings, who cannot be seen with the eyes. They're just looking for somebody to just enter into and perform nefarious activities. And people who are drinking, people who are depressed, people who are stressed out and anxiety ridden, they lose control of their mind and consciousness and they can easily be possessed. This is a reality. How is it people create the most obscene activities? They're being influenced by the environment. Spirituality involves purifying the mind, filtering the mind to bring it to its natural state. When water first falls from the cloud, it's pure. In contact with the dirt, it takes on the qualities of the mud. If you want to bring it back to its original quality, you put it through the process of filtration. When we remember God, we purify our heart. Om apavitra pavitro va, because God is all pure. By remembering the Lord, we become purified. Therefore, the essential teaching of Bhagavad Gita, which is the solution to all problems, is man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru. Always remember me, Krishna says. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will know me. You will come to me without fail. This is the need of the world, to learn to love, to learn to be compassionate through loving God, through purifying our heart. Krishna appears in this age of Kali as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us the process. He prayed, Chaito Dharapanam Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. the means by which we can clean the mirror of the mind and understand the true essence, the true wealth, the true ecstatic love within us is the chanting of the holy names. This chanting of the names of the Lord is not just for babas and monks. It is meant for everyone. Whether you are an engineer or a scientist, technologist, businessman, student, mother, agriculturalist, architect, lawyer, or monk, if we want to do something that will bring our life real fulfillment, if we want to actually make a real difference in this world and produce through our actions morality, nobility, and satisfaction, that we must become instruments of God's love through purifying our own hearts through the chanting of the holy names. Bhagavad Gita tells that the ocean is so wide and it is so deep that it is not affected by the rivers and streams that flow into it from various directions. Similarly, the consciousness, the mind of a person who is finding inner satisfaction from the spiritual self in love for God, even though it's experiencing the various dualities of material existence, its peace cannot be disturbed, because that love, that happiness is so deep, it is so great, that the insignificant changes of material environment around us are insignificant in comparison. This is real stability. A lotus flower can grow even in the muddiest pond, but it remains pure. That is the natural state of our consciousness. When one's heart becomes purified, one develops godly qualities. And also part of the process of becoming purified is to live by godly qualities. In this world, greatness is not come through possession and power. Real greatness is manifest through humility and compassion. When there is humility, we do not expect anything from anyone. We're grateful for whoever does anything for us. But if we have an arrogant mind, we're always expecting what we want from people. Most of you are not married, but if you want a happy marriage, please take this lesson very seriously. Because as a sannyasi, sometimes I'm able to observe life from a neutral position, especially marriage. One of the greatest problems is the husband expects the wife to be what he wants her to be. Huh? Have you heard this before? And sometimes the wife expects the husband to be what she wants him to be. And if he doesn't mate to her, come out of your illusion. Wake up, sleeping soul. You're sleeping in the lap of the witch of Maya. You should understand that this is how I want you to cook. This is the way I want you to walk. This is the way I want you to dress. This is the way I want you to bow down to me. And then your wife says, get lost. It's a flaming arrow in the heart. She's not mine. She's not surrendering. Something's wrong with her. And then sometimes we become abusive. We become frustrated. We try to change something that simply cannot be changed. Because the way material nature is there are no two false egos alike. But when we're humble, we're grateful. This is the way you are. Whatever you cook for me, I deserve worse. Then you're happy. Yes? Then you're never in anxiety. You don't listen to me. Actually, I deserve to be in a hellish planet with the Yamadutas putting pins in my eyes. And you're just not listening to me. This is very nice, very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much. If you're humble, you can be grateful. If you're arrogant, you're always expecting what you want. And this is a cause of depression. Sometimes manic depression. Because you're not able to control what you want to control. The mind is so affected by our attitude. Even in a difficult situation, even in a painful, inconceivable condition that is forced upon us, instead of being frustrated and hopeless and empty and confused and disappointed and depressed, we can overcome it through the simple process of folding our palms and praying, my dear Lord, I deserve worse. I'm grateful for this opportunity to remember you, to serve you, and to chant your holy name.
Vishnu, 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 Vishnu.
If you have this type of faith based on scientific truth of the nature of the soul and consciousness, then even the most difficult predicament gives you the joy of an opportunity to show your love and your devotion. Gives you an opportunity to go deeper within, to realize your spiritual needs under that circumstance. You can see the glass as half empty and be depressed, or you can see it as half full and be elated. It's a matter of your perception. So please, understand, the more you expect, the more you suffer. The more you work honestly, earnestly, with a grateful heart, you can be happy in any situation. If you expect honor, one of the biggest rock and roll stars of the 1960s, and he's still one of the biggest even today, I will not mention names, but I knew someone who was friends with the girl that was going on dates with him. You know what date is? Some kind of thing where boys and girls mix without marriage. And she was saying, the man is so insecure. He's always fearful that the crowd may not like him when he performs. He's never happy. Always expecting. Because he has so much fame, he's expecting more fame. The more you have, the more you need. A famous person needs so much glorification and adoration. A simple person doesn't need that much. It's the nature of the mind. It's never satisfied. It expects more and more and more. Humility is the divine virtue that brings gratitude and inner satisfaction. Forgiveness. As long as we hold grudges against people who we think have done something wrong to us, that grudge, that hard feeling, is like fire that burns your very soul. It's hellish. It's miserable to hate someone. The hate you have for someone destroys you 100 times more than you can hurt that person. Forgiveness is real power, not hate. Hate is a symptom of a invalided heart. Weakness, cripple-mindedness, and the power to forgive of this is a sign of real inner strength and integrity. Many examples. Jesus Christ forgave the people who persecuted and crucified him. Haridas Thakur forgave the people who beat him and tried to kill him all day long. Prahlad Maharaj begged the Lord to forgive his father who tried in every way to destroy him. These people showed us through forgiveness how to be peaceful, happy, and close to God in every situation. Selflessness. A devotee is paradukaduki. As long as, please listen carefully, I know I'm speaking too much and too long, but usually I do, I'm sorry. Prabhupada said that eloquence, true eloquence, is to speak concisely. So I'm sorry. Whatever I am, please don't expect me to be anything different. And you will not suffer so much through this class. Paradukaduki. If you always want other people to love you, you'll feel that nobody loves you. It's the nature of the mind. If you're expecting people to have affection for you, to encourage you, and to love you, you'll be in frustration. Even if people love you, you won't even recognize it properly. When you give love, when you give compassion, then you'll actually recognize how people are reciprocating and giving it back. who are the people who are most actually loved in this world? Persons who don't want to be loved. Persons whose main concern is to give love. People who selflessly want to serve and help others, people naturally love them. So stop expecting, and give. Because that's the nature of the soul. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. We are servants. We are not the masters. We are not God. We will never become God. We are always the servant of the Supreme. And in serving, we can taste the ecstasy of immortal love. And we can share that. We see amongst devotees, those who are always expecting people to respect them, to love them, they're always insecure. But people who want to just respect others and love others, they're always happy. Because they're receiving. If you don't want, you get. If you want to take, you lose. If you want to give, you receive. That is the laws of nature. So we must understand that this is the real root cause of suffering. And one of the greatest of all sufferings in today's world is depression. The title of today's class is Overcoming Depression. If you want to overcome and help others overcome this horrible disease, we must treat the root of that disease. By cleaning our heart, by understanding the nature of the soul, and by realizing the taste of the love that is within our hearts. And that comes through association. When we associate with saintly people, we become saintly. If we associate with others, we will become like that. So to associate with saintly people, to associate with those places and those things that actually remind us of what we really want in life, we become purified. And most of all, when we associate with God through His name, our hearts become cleansed. And we can overcome depression and all the other confusions, complexities of the mind. And we can actually be transmitters of light and love in our life. Through our words, through our actions, through our example, through our profession, whether you're a mother or a father, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're of any nationality, any caste, these are all temporary designations. The nature of the soul is to love. So you are all young, full of energy, full of intelligence. The world is crumbling. There's a big, 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 beautiful monument being created. But inside, there's rats and moths and cockroaches and
bats and snakes just eating the very fiber of society. So please, the people of India have been blessed with the highest spiritual culture. You have an opportunity to do the most glorious and desperately needed service to humanity, to help them overcome the sufferings of depression. Become a vessel of truth and give light to this world that is getting darker and darker. I thank you very much. Is there any questions?
So, just before the question answer session, I would just request His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj to release the book which is based on the different lectures which have been given in the Prerana Festival in the last 6 months. So I request His Grace Srinathji Prabhu to please come forward. Srinathji Prabhu, Dr. N.D. Desai, Chairman of the Power Group of Industries, has been very much instrumental in helping us bringing out this book. And he's always been one of the very enthusiastic preachers to the youth. He's been preaching in IIT and other colleges for many years. I request Srinathji Prabhu to present this book to His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj so that it can be revealed. I also request Srinathji Prabhu to give one copy to Professor Bhattacharya.
This is for you.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! So this book will be at display below and it is for sale for 35 rupees only. So those devotees who are interested on the way out, it's called Revival, Vedic Alternatives for Youth, and it contains the first 6 lectures which were given in the Prerana series. Now if there are any questions.
Your Holiness, at one point in the lecture you said that it's very difficult to have deep personal relationships in the scenario around in the world. There's a lot of impersonalization. And so later on you said that the source of all the suffering in this world are relationships. Sir, I'm confused.
The source of all suffering is we have forgotten our relationship. The consciousness is relationship with the soul and the soul's relationship with God. And in this world, source of such great suffering is that we do not have loving relationships.
So do you intend to say that we should develop deep interpersonal relationships and we are not being able to do that and that's the source of the suffering, or the relationships are the source of the suffering?
In the West, it is very common that wife dies, children go off, because they usually, rarely do they stay close to their parents. It's not the culture. And the man's alone. So usually the common thing is he gets a dog. And that's his best friend. Feeds the dog. Talks to the dog. Watches television with the dog. Eats with the dog. Why? Because we have to have someone to show our affection to. We have to have relationship. one of the greatest sources of depression, this disease, is divorce. People sometimes go through traumatic depression after a divorce. Another very significant form of depression comes from when a loved one dies or rejects us or leaves us. Because the heart needs relationship. The soul longs for relationship. And when relationships in this world are broken or dissatisfied, it creates much mental anguish and depression. Do you agree? And even amongst devotees, this is very important for those of you who may be practicing Krishna consciousness. Please listen carefully. Chaturvidha bhajante mam. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that four types of people come to the path of devotion. Those who are impoverished, those who are in distress, those who are inquisitive, and those who are really seeking knowledge. But most people come because they're in distress. Many people are depressed because of distress. And therefore they come to devotional service for relief. Because of the impersonalism of the world. And even amongst devotees, if we're impersonalist with each other, if we're not giving the proper love and care to each other, then even devotees, they revert back to their depressed state and could even commit suicide. Because it's their conditioning to be depressed. It's their conditioning to be depressed through impersonalism of the world. So if we want a healthy spiritual society, there must be very satisfactory, caring, loving relationships amongst devotees centered around service. Glorification of God, service to God, service to one another, encouragement, enlightenment. We need to produce that social environment to sustain and support our devotees. Because not everyone's pure. Everyone's striving for purity. Yes.
Maharaj, in today's scenario, we find that there are many engineering colleges. They are multiplied like anything. Before 30 years ago, there are only 5 colleges in Maharashtra state. And now there are many colleges and engineers are also on a great scale. And they will become engineer, they will make a machine, size engines. And in one point of lecture you tell that for a few comforts we destroy the material environment. And now introducing such a large number of engineering colleges and giving such a material studies, we are increasing the problem actually. So is it a contradictory behavior of us? Me myself is in fourth year engineering, and I am also concerned about that. After doing engineering, we go to job and we also do machines and we also make problems increase.
You are an enlightened soul. Our Guru Maharaj would sometimes say, if you're in a forest and you get a thorn in your foot, how do you take the thorn out? With another thorn? Yes? Haribo. So, yes, the misuse of higher education has created many, many problems in the world. But if we have the proper motivation, the proper intelligence, then we can actually use the same technology to solve the problems in the world. It's not compassionate, God-loving engineers that create problems. It's engineers that may be plagued with spiritual ignorance, which causes exploitation and greed that cause so many problems. Yes? One person is going on an airplane to hijack it and kill everybody. Srila Prabhupada went on airplane to travel all over the world to teach everyone to be happy chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Is the airplane good or bad? It may be creating some pollution. But in the process, if saintly people go on it, they're actually neutralizing the pollution and bringing great purification and hope to people's lives. So yes, be an engineer. My request to you is be number one in your class. And when people ask how, tell them, because I have given my heart to Krishna. And so many people will listen to you because you have succeeded on their level. By your success, by your knowledge, people will look up to you. And if they see your life is an example of humility, compassion, and devotion based on knowledge, how much you can affect people's lives. Maybe or maybe not through your specific profession of engineering. But the credibility you gain through that, your example can transform people's hearts. You see, we do not want to annihilate our desires. We don't want to annihilate our propensities. We want to transform them from darkness to light, from selfishness to selfless service. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Respected Swamiji, my question is how to channelize and control the sexual impulses in the young age, in the youth? How to convert the sexual energy into spiritual energy?
In youth. If you think it's going to be easier when you go older, you may be in for a surprise. It is the fundamental distraction of the mind within this world. But in youth it is very strong because it's something that's new. Just like old crows. They can eat garbage, but they're not as enthusiastic about new crows because it's a new taste. Yes? So in youth, there's a newness, there's a vitality for all these things. But we should understand, what is the origin of our sexual desires? It's our desire to love. Microphone?
Everybody hankers after pleasure. So sex is a very pleasurable activity, so it is
Yes.
It requires strong willpower to, I mean, overcome it. What are the possible means of avoiding?
The means is to simultaneously restrain the mind and the senses from seeking those things that are going to put more fuel on the fire that's burning in our heart. Sex can never satisfy one's passions. It temporarily,
yes.
But then through the process, the fire becomes stronger. The more fuel you put on the fire goes down whilst it's coming on, but then it's bigger, stronger. So simultaneously, we must avoid adding fuel to the fire. And at the same time, we should channel that energy in such a way that we can experience a higher love, a higher experience, a higher fulfillment. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. We should take that youthful energy that's within us and engage it in spiritual activities that bring in inner fulfillment.
I mean, I want to encourage outdoor sports, swimming and all those activities. I mean, and just as want to encourage playing outdoor sports or learning swimming or things like that, to refrain from sexual thoughts.
Exercise is good for the body. But it's better to perform these exercises for the sake of exercise.
I mean, there's a word called love. And
what is the motivation for the exercise? If you're doing the exercise because you want a healthy body to engage in positive activities for the world, then that will be very good.
I heard that the full form of love, L-O-V-E, is loss of vital energy.
Huh? They
say that the full form of wife, they say full form of wife is worries invited forever, and after marriage there is love, L-O-V-E, and that the full form is loss of vital energy. I think all the great spiritual masters are very big celibates.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, and your words are bringing great happiness to our brahmacharis.
Since it is a youth meeting,
look, Gaur Gopal Prabhu is the he is the convener of this meeting tonight.
Since it is a youth meeting, I am asking this question with the...
You have given him much satisfaction.
Thank you.
Yes. Hare Krishna Maharaj, you said that if you want to avoid depress, then you should aspire for humility and grateful heart. So where it actually comes from, actually, humility and grateful heart. In whatever walk of life, if you are humble and grateful, then you can progress more. And where actually we should aspire for humility and gratefulness. Where this aspiration actually comes from?
Humility comes from Krishna. Humility is the natural quality of a pure soul. It is your nature to be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. In that state of mind, to always be glorifying God's name, that is our very nature. As we become purified, we naturally become humble. A great personality is not just one who speaks big philosophy. A great personality is one who has the virtue of humility. and compassion, self-control, tolerance, truthfulness, selflessness. But at the same time, to develop the purity of the heart, we must also practice within our life and words the principles of humility. With our intelligence, we should evaluate the particular circumstance we're in. And when we see arrogance arising, we have to subdue it with our intelligence. We should act humble. Of course, in certain situations, aggressiveness, speaking with great certainty and authority, may be the way we are humble. Our Guru Maharaj would sometimes, he was like a lion speaking the truth. But he never thought that I am the speaker. He was just the humble messenger of God, trying to serve the people he was talking to by that powerful presentation. So real humility is to do the will of God without expecting credit or glorification for oneself, but just being the instrument, the servant. And we should actually cultivate with our intelligence that attitude in our life, and pray for the realization of that attitude and realize it through hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and the association of those who are really aspiring for humility. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Prabhuji, how the mind influenced by the body? It's reasoned by our temperaments or our previous karma. How the mind influenced by the body?
Can we take that thing off the top of it? The foam? Yes.
How the mind influenced by the body? It's reasoned by our temperaments or our previous karma?
How the mind influences the body
and affects the body. Reasoned by our temperaments or our previous karmas.
Certainly whatever temperaments we have now is due to our previous karmas. However, our future temperaments are going to be created by how we decide to respond to our previous karmas. An example. I feel angry at someone. Now that disposition of anger is due to previous karmas. Yes? But I have free will. I could surrender to that anger and smash that person in the face, and that will create a disposition and a temperament of either even more intensified anger in the future. Yes? However, if that impulse for anger is consuming me, no, I will not. We take shelter of the name of God and we act respectfully to that person. Then what happens? Through that experience, we have actually cleansed ourselves of that previous karma. And we're creating a more purified disposition for the future. So we have free will at all times. If you get on an airplane to Delhi, then you're going to Delhi. You have no choice. But you have a lot of choices what you do on the airplane. You can overeat and get sick. You can hit somebody and get put in jail. You can go to sleep. You could chant the holy names. You could read the Bhagavad Gita. Yes? That will determine your future. So your karmas are predestining you to certain situations today, but how what you do in that situation will be what you create for your future. Karmic reactions are there, but still you have free will how you're going to respond to that. We are makers of our own destiny.
Hello, Prabhuji, what is the management of acute depressive attack when somebody gets sick? What he should do exactly at that time?
How to manage maniac depressive attack? Is that your question?
Any acute depressive attack, that he is very depressed, what he should do at that moment?
When a person is getting that attack, is it a chronic disease or just something that comes upon you?
Acute attack. Some calamity or something very bad experience.
Generally, if we take shelter, like Arjuna, of saintly people, a saintly environment, the names of God, prayers to God, with the help of God we can overcome. Sometimes, if there's a very karmically complicated chemical condition of our chemical imbalance, sometimes we may have to take some medication just to be calm enough to pray to God and go to saintly people and chant His holy names. That's the solution. It's the only real solution. But in certain circumstances, we may need some help to even do that properly. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
As we have discussed earlier, like about various problems we face in our day-to-day life, what I think like the basic cause for these problems is like moha, maya, kam, not getting satisfied with what we have or what we are getting. So basically how we can overcome these things like moha, maya, kam and all these things for everything and anything.
By experiencing inner fulfillment. Without inner fulfillment, there can be no fulfillment at all. Because what is satisfaction? Contemplate that question. Even if you see something very beautiful with your eyes, is that really sad? Where is the satisfaction? It's not your eyes. It's your heart. Is it not? The seat of all pleasure is your heart. Even if you're eating your favorite dish, what food do you like best?
Sweet, like gulab jamun, for example.
You like gulab jamun best of all foods. It gives you inner satisfaction. I also like gulab jamun. I I remember the first time I ever had a gulab jamun. Would you like to hear the story? Do we have time? I was in Rishikesh, living as a sadhu. And I did a tapasya of 1 month, eating one carrot a day and meditating on the bank of Ganga. And one day, a few days after my tapasya was finished, I was just 20 years old at the time. There was a restaurant near the Swargashram called Chotiwala. Chotiwala. And somebody invited me, come. They thought I was a they said, come Baba, come Baba. And he gave me this brown ball. I thought it was a piece of fruit. I thought it was some sort of a strange looking apple or something like that. And I bit into it. And I was very happy. Very, very happy. So your favorite sweet is gulab jamuns. Now let me ask you a question. If you fail your exam, don't fail your exam, but if, hypothetically, if you fail your exam, and your mother and father kick you out of the house, and you're kicked out of your college, and someone gives you a gulab jamun, will your heart find inner satisfaction?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely. So real pleasure is not on the tongue or in the eyes or in the ears or in the flesh. It's of the heart. Even the great pleasure that is being advertised tonight, sex. If you have a nice relationship with your lover, terrible battle with that person, then even there's no satisfaction of the heart. Even with the king of pleasures for the body. So real happiness is of the heart. And the heart is longing for Krishna. It is our nature. We can only give up the superficial, external, unnatural, artificial pleasures by experiencing the inner satisfaction of the heart. That is real fulfillment. If you're happy within, you're happy in every circumstance. If you're not happy within, you can find no real pleasure in any circumstance. Does that answer your question?
I got one more question. Just now, as you told, depression, distress brings us into Krishna consciousness. A few days before, I had asked one question to Prabhu, whether a situation, condition pulls us, brings us into Krishna consciousness or not. So I got the answer is that it's not the situation or distress, but it is the past deeds which brings us into this Krishna consciousness. So I am asking, how would we relate these two things, the past deeds as well as these situations that bring us into Krishna consciousness?
There are three principles. There is the past deeds. That gives us a certain conditioned inclination to react under the certain circumstances. Yes? But there is also one's free will. Even if you have past deeds that make you very inclined to turn to God under circumstances, still, you can choose not to do so. and even if your past deeds give you the inclination to take shelter of material energy in certain circumstances, by your free will, you could turn to God. It is essential that we choose that type of association and lifestyle that will cultivate the inner strength to use our free will to make the right choices in every circumstance that comes upon us in life. That is real intelligence.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hari Bol.
My question is that for overcoming depression, we need to control or conquer the mind. But when we require necessary intelligence. But when we think that we should control the mind, doesn't it mean that mind itself is engaged in some other activities or itself is controlling the intelligence? Then how to actually process the mind in the right way? How to actually direct the mind practically in the right way to overcome this depression?
That is the function of the intelligence. In Bhagavad Gita, as it is, you will find a beautiful photograph where it is explained that the body is like a chariot. The senses are like five horses which pull that chariot. The mind is the ropes that control the horses. The intelligence is the charioteer. And the spirit soul is the passenger. If the passenger does not have a good intelligence that control the senses through the mind, then we do not know where we are destined. So we must develop our intelligence through philosophical discrimination and through purity of purpose. That is very important. So that in every situation that may come upon us, where our mind, which is sometimes acting as our best friend and sometimes our worst enemy, our intelligence can discriminate. In certain circumstances, the intelligence will say, "Yes, mind, you want to chant the names? Chant. No, mind. You want to go to cinema or eat fish? No, you should not do this. It is not for your welfare." So we must discriminate. And for that we must have knowledge. And in order to have the power to apply that knowledge in difficult circumstances, we need to work on purifying our heart and gaining inner strength by associating with saintly people and by chanting God's names. This gives us the spiritual strength to apply our knowledge to control the mind and senses. Is there any other questions?
Prabhuji, my question is that one single mind, Hitler has devoted millions of persons to destructive work. Why there is no Hitler in spiritual world who can devote thousands or millions of the people in spiritual life?
There have been many. In the Western world, Lord Jesus Christ, the Prophet Muhammad affected so many lives in the right way. Obviously, with any good thing, people can use it in a bad way too. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, then millions of people went back home to the spiritual world by his influence. And our beloved Srila Prabhupada, one man at the age of 70 from this great land of India, he had no money, he had no support, he had no contacts. Here in Bombay, he was given a free passage on a cargo ship, the MV Jaladuta. He suffered two heart attacks. He arrived in New York City and had another heart attack and was partially paralyzed. He had no funds, no followers, no support. But he had a burning compassion and love for Krishna. That love for Krishna gave him such compassion and concern to help others. And through his noble effort, millions of people are getting Bhagavad Gita. Millions of people are chanting the holy names. In every continent in the world, there are temples. And millions of people purifying their lives and going back to Godhead. And he has left followers, a culture and a society that can bring millions and millions and millions of more people. And if people take his message seriously through this one great man's sacrifice, there can be transformation of the world from hate and greed to love and compassion. So yes, there are many such examples. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they transformed so many people's lives, and their influence is transforming people's lives hundreds of years later. Every one of us can be a part of that great revolution of compassion. That is our greatest fortune. So please, let us all take very seriously the most auspicious opportunity that we are all being given to experience the love of Krishna and help to be a part of illuminating that love. Srila Prabhupada would say, I am one Indian and has spread love of God throughout the world. And he said to all other Indian people, what you could all do if you just take this great science seriously. I thank you very, very much. Shall we have kirtan? Because it went late, we cannot chant for very long, but qualitatively, I request everyone put their heart and soul in calling out Krishna's holy names.